Good morning. See, Jason has left me. I only had like 3 points today, but he's got four, so I'm not sure what that one will be, but we'll get to it. It's good to be here this morning. I spent this last week in California. If you ever get to a place where you don't appreciate Bayfield, come with me for a trip. It's like an hour and a half everywhere. And it can only be 10 miles, but it's still an hour and a half. So it was good to get back home. We're going to be in Romans chapter 12 this morning. This is the chapter everybody's been waiting for, and we're going to break it down over the course of several weeks. And I think it's important that let's read this text and then we'll dive into it. I'm reading again out of the ESV. It says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is the good and acceptable and perfect. That's like all we're going to go into today, those two verses. And I know you're thinking, how can we milk that out into an hour and a half sermon? Just watch. We can make this happen. It's good to see Harvey and Linda back. So the first 11 chapters, Paul just spent the previous 11 chapters in Romans unpacking the incredible riches of the gospel and God's wrath against sin, justification by faith alone, the blessings of adoption, the security of God's love, his sovereign mercy even towards rebellious Israel. Now he pivots with the powerful word, therefore. And I think we've spent several months going over the first 11 chapters, and it's been a lot. We've seen the sinfulness of man. We've seen God giving people over to their sinful desires. We've seen Romans 6, where it talks about the beauty of coming into this relationship, and then the sovereignty of God. And we've seen all these things, and then this pivotal point where everything shifts in the book of Romans from here to the end of the book. Starts with the word therefore. Y'all have heard me say, if therefore is there, we probably ought to figure out what it's there for. And so since we have all this understanding and appreciation of what Paul is trying to put together for the people reading this letter, he gets to this place and says, therefore, since all of this is true, since Jesus came and is the totalness of everything. You guys have heard me say this at least 100 times. You know, that when you get Jesus, you get the whole thing. You get all of it. You get the sacrifice. You get the old covenant. You get the new covenant. You get the redemption through Christ. If you get Jesus, you get the whole package. So many times in our life, we break down, and this is kind of what this text is going to talk about this morning. So many times in our lives, we break down. Like, is anybody out there go, okay, I need to work harder today at being a Christian? Three honest people. Four. Got you, Aaron. Sometimes, and then we kind of, how many of y'all said this? Let's break it down even further than that. I need to work on my prayer life. Or I need to work on reading scripture more. Or I need to work on being kind. Or I need to work on being more forgiving. And we isolate and we break down these little sectors of life. I preached a sermon years and years ago back when I was young, and I had a bunch of balloons. And I wrote on each of those balloons. And I had someone like Imani come up and just help me. I should have done this morning because I always like making fun of Imani. And I would write, like, hey, work on forgiveness on a balloon and hand it to Imani. Just picture this, if you will, since I don't have balloons. And then I'd write forgiveness, and I'd hand it to Monty. And then we'd work on prayer life. I'd hand it to Monty. Reading scripture, hand it to Monty. Work on my marriage, hand it to Monty. And before you know it, he's got like 100 balloons that he's trying to hang on to. And I think sometimes that's how we are in our Christian walk, It's like we isolate these independent and very good things, and we kind of idolize them for a minute, and we try to get better at it. And the whole while, we're getting better at this, and we're starting to do what about everything else over here? We leave it behind and forget about it. And all of a sudden, kindness falls off. Because you can't hang on to it and hang on to the other stuff. And then forgiveness falls on. And then we get into this place in our life where we're just so frustrated because it's like the harder I try, the more mistakes I make. Anybody like that? And I think that's kind of the struggle in the Christian walk, is that we're trying to isolate these good attributes. We're trying to chase these good attributes. We're trying to understand what the will of God is. We're trying to understand all of this stuff, and we get into this place where we just can't consume it all. We can't take it all in. We can't manage it. That's the point. That's the beauty of Christ. Christ is saying, if you get me, you get it all. You get it all. Instead of focusing on kindness, focus on me. Instead of focusing on forgiveness, focus on me. Instead of focusing on spending more time in prayer, focus on me. It doesn't matter. We just got to start realizing that Jesus is the fullness of everything. He brings the Old Testament to life. And there's a phrase in here that this text starts with. And therefore, since all of these things that I'm talking about, I think the first point that Paul is trying to make in this is oftentimes we present the gospel as something for unbelievers. It's like, hey, we need to get out there and preach the gospel, convert the world. And then we become believers, and then we kind of forget about the gospel. We're like, well, that's for saving people. But there's some terminology here, and I need us to understand. If you want better water, should you make your well wider, Monty? Or deeper? You want the gospel to become fullness? Quit trying to make it wider and dive deeper into it. The beauty of who Jesus is, he's saying, listen, the deeper you dive into me, the pure is going to be. So this gospel message that's been presented, that Jesus walks and gives his ministry, it's not for the unbelievers, it's for everyone. And the more you believe, the deeper you should dive into that message that Jesus has given you. Because there's more beauty in it. There's more redemption in it. And so I want to challenge y'all with that. But it says, therefore, I appeal to you, brothers, therefore, brothers, by mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice. We like the word sacrifice. The people in the Old Testament like the word sacrifice because they could raise a goat or go buy it at the money changer tables at the temple and offer it as a sacrifice. Anybody slaughtered anything before? I know it's a farming community and ranching community, so yep. We've all done that, right? And we kind of like that because I want you to think in terms of sacrifice and how they would have done it in the Old Testament. They would have taken something, they would have cut the old throat and let it bleed out, right? That thing's never getting off the altar. The hardship sometimes that we have with this idea that Paul presents to us this morning as a living sacrifice is it's like, okay, God, I want to be a sacrifice. I want to sacrifice my being to you. And we hop up on that altar until it's uncomfortable. And then we hop back off because we're living. The problem with the living sacrifice is you can get off the altar. And I think so oftentimes in our lives, that's exactly what we do. We just keep hopping off the altar. It's like, I'm going to give it to you when it's convenient, but I'm taking it back when it's not. I'm going to give it to you when things are working right. I'm going to take it back when it's not. And so this idea that Paul presents us, he's saying, listen, you need to be a living sacrifice, one that goes onto the altar and stays on the altar and starts to produce an idea of who I am. And so I want us to understand the difference between the Old Testament. They would do something for something. They would take a sacrifice to the temple so that their sins would be atoned. The New Testament sacrifice is, I'm going to obey, not to gain something, but as a result of something. All religions in the world, except for Christianity, have this backwards. They have, I'm going to obey so that I can receive. The more, how many of y'all, there's a bunch, younger kids, all right? How many of y'all have ever been manipulated by your parents? If you do this, you get this. Jaden's like smiling because that's the rules, right? It's like, if you do this, you get this. It's like, I want to garner your obedience through any means necessary. I used to tell my boys that when I would go out of town on a buying trip, and they were both in the house, I would look at them and I'd say, boys, please behave for your mother. Please. They never did. I guess the prize wasn't big enough at the end of the rainbow. But oftentimes that's exactly how we function in our Christian walk. I'll obey so that. Instead of, I receive, so therefore I will obey. And see, this living sacrifice has that to it. It's like, I'm not going to obey to gain something. I'm not going to sacrifice to gain something. I'm going to obey and I'm going to sacrifice because I've already got it. I've already received it. The beauty of what God has given us in our Christian walk is He gave you the prize up front. And He says, shouldn't that promote obedience? Shouldn't that promote sacrifice? You've been given everything. If I went home one day and there was a buddy of mine sitting on the doorstep, and when I walked up, he said, hey, you got somebody, some guy walking in looking for you. Said you owed him money. But don't worry about it, I took care of it. Well, if it was the postman and I just forgot to put a stamp on my envelope and he covered the stamp, I'd say, hey, appreciate it. But if it was the mafia and I owed him $9 million and he took care of it, how would I feel? How deep would the appreciation go? Man, I'd be pretty eternally grateful. And that's what we've got in Jesus. Satan showed up. And he said, hey, Kevin, check this out. I already paid. No worries. How grateful would I be? And sometimes we just think it's a postage stamp. Instead of realizing he saved me, I'm going to obey because I've been saved. I'm not going to obey to be saved. We've got to get this order in place. Which is your spiritual, at the end of verse 1, which is your spiritual worship. Interestingly enough, some of your Bibles may say true worship. Just to highlight that, the word that the Greek word that's used for in ESV translation is spiritual. Some of your translations might be true. It's like, I can't say the Greek word because I'm not Greek. But the word is logical. Logical. So let me reread that because I think it makes sense in this context. Present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your logical worship. If somebody died and rescued you, it's logical to worship. How is it not logical? I actually wish that they would put that word back in there. That this is logical. We like logical things, right? We did a math problem in the middle school Bible class today. It's logical to me. It makes sense. This is logical. Why wouldn't I worship? This is your logical worship. That you would worship somebody who rescued you. But don't be conformed to this world. Here's our struggle, right? Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. That by testing you may discern what is the good, what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. I think oftentimes in our lives, this is the concept we struggle with the most. It's a concept I struggle with the most. I want to go through a series of questions. If you take notes, I want you to write your answers down. If you don't take notes, just answer in your head. Because let me see if I can find it. Sorry. Here we go. It's called the idolatry detection test. Everybody ready for that one, right? The things... So this test, your first response to this. The things I'd be most worried about losing in life. The thing I'd be most worried about losing in life. What would that be in your life? Would it be family? money, respect, success. And you know, Jesus is always the right answer, but let's be honest in your replies here, okay? The thing that I'd be most worried about losing is what? The next one, the thing I'd be most worried about never attaining. Riches, possibly. Prestige. Comfort. A spouse. If I could change blank about myself right now, I would change it. What would it be? Throughout your life, you have been most willing to sacrifice for what? You know, for me, it was always work. I was always more willing to sacrifice family and things in life for work and for success in work. To be known. You know, I know we live in a small little area, right? But I'm pretty well known in this area. Unfortunately, not for preaching. For car dealing. Very known in Las Vegas, Nevada for car dealing. I'm good at it, but I've sacrificed a lot to be that good. What is it in your life that you've been willing to sacrifice for? What's made you the most bitter in life? What can't you forgive? What are you willing to lie for? Where do you turn for comfort? Whose approval do you seek most? These are hard questions to wrestle with. Because the reality is, if you're like me, as I kind of went through this before this morning, I didn't like my answers. I didn't like how I answered a lot of those things. And the reality is, so oftentimes, the word, it's a Hebrew word, not Greek word, but it's like kebab. Kabod, I think is actually, I think kebab when I hear it. It's weight. And so worship equals worth, some kind of worth. And so I need you kind of hear me on this. Worship equals worth it. We worship what we find worth in. Does that make sense? And oftentimes we worship what has kabod, weight, what carries weight to me. Everyone in here is a little bit different. Everybody in here has things that carry weight, that carries a significance. And oftentimes it's what carries significance in your life is what we're actually worshiping. That would make it an idol. And oftentimes in our life, it's not bad things. It's things that are like, I love my wife, right? I love my children. I love my grandchildren. I love my mother. I love my dad. I love you guys. And that carries weight in my life. And it's got value in my life. But is it to the point where it takes place of God? And so oftentimes in our life, we get into this place where things of value, you know, there may be, for me, there were some negative things on this list when I answered these questions. Some things I wasn't necessarily proud of. There's, for me, injected into that list was family several times. And things that are good things, but if they become an idol, idol has a tendency to become what we worship the most or what we seek the most. Even from the Garden of Eden with, their idol was having some kind of superiority. And they traded in the garden for that superiority. But what do we find value in? And what we find value in oftentimes takes the place of God. And what God is saying is, listen, nothing should take my place. I talked to a friend of ours' daughter, Sarah Wolfert, this week on the phone. because her sister, I had dinner with her sister and a roommate in California, like an hour and a half from where I was staying. And she told me that her sister Sarah had a new boyfriend. And she's like, but Kevin, the first thing she told me about her boyfriend is he is a man of God. I was like, oh, that's awesome. So when I was talking to Sarah on the phone, I was like, oh, I hear you have a new boyfriend. She said, did my dad sell me out? And I'm like, no, it was actually your sister. And I said, I have one question for you. Does he love Jesus more than he loves you? She said, he does. I said, okay. Because so often in our lives, we just get these priorities. You want your marriage to be better? Love Jesus more than you love your spouse. You want to be a better parent? Love Jesus more than you love your kids. You want to be a better employee or employer? Love Jesus more than you love them. The more I spend time falling in love with my Redeemer, the better I get at everything I do. And I think that's Paul's point. He said, don't conform to the world, because when you start chasing what the world has to offer, you're going to be inept in so many things in life. But instead of being conformed, be transformed. When we think of that Greek word, it's like something to do with a caterpillar. Metamorphosis or something like that. But have you ever seen a caterpillar fly? Never have, personally. I mean, we could bolt some wings on that thing, right? But man, he'd get tired, right? And being transformed, can you imagine bolting some wings on a butterfly? Not a butterfly. We're not there yet. It hasn't transformed. Bolting some wings on a caterpillar and asking him to fly. It's kind of what we do in life. We try to be a Christian, so we bolt things onto our existence to try to be better, to try to represent the cross better. Who in here thinks it's good to be a better person? Are you trying to do it on your own? Because that's oftentimes what we're doing. We're not being transformed. Because transformed says, I'm going to change all of who you are. I don't want you to bolt on wings so you can fly. I'm going to take you from a caterpillar and turn you into a butterfly where it's natural. And so it begs the question. Here's everybody's question. This has been my question for so many years of my life. And I need you to hear this question. How many of y'all want to know what God's will is in your life? How many of y'all spent half of your life, or two-thirds, or seven-eighths, or very little, trying to figure out what's God's will? Is it God's will that I take this job or don't take this job? Is this God's will that I date this girl or don't date this girl? Is this God's will that... How many of y'all go through those steps? Where we're constantly just going through all of life circumstances going, is this in God's will or is this not in God's will? Today I have the answer for you. God's will is to become His will. God's will is to become His will. Because if I'm His will, I know what to do. We get so caught up in the mechanical nature of life that we miss the essence of what God has called us to do. God has called us into His will. And so the more, this is kind of the same trap. We sit there and question and hover in life because we don't know what direction to go. And we're just, how many of y'all would just like God to just, I'm walking this way, whoop, roadblock, thanks God. Walk this way, roadblock, whoop, thanks God. Would anybody prefer that? It would just be a lot easier in our life. And what Paul is saying is it can be that easy. It can be that easy because if you spend your life chasing God, you will know His will. One of the hardest things in life for me to get comfortable with, I know this is going to sound super strange, all right? Because I enjoy preaching. I'm a car dealer. Car dealers are just like one notch above attorneys, right? Maybe even in your brain, maybe one notch below, right? Lan and I were at Blue Haven 18 years ago teaching, and we had never taught this session, and so Michael had me speak the first night, so I spoke, and then like 3 days in, we're serving food to the kids, and there's a lady standing next to me, and she goes, what do you do for a living? I said, because I was kind of embarrassed, really, right? I mean, is your profession a little embarrassing, right? And I'm like, well, I'm a car dealer. She goes, nah, no, you're not. I'm like, no, I really am. She's like, no, you're not a car dealer. I heard you preach a couple nights ago. There's no way you're a car dealer. And so Philip Camp was there, who I've known Philip for most of my life. I was like, hey, Philip, she doesn't believe that I'm a car dealer. She thinks I'm a preacher. And he goes, no, he's a preacher. He's just messing with you. I'm like, Philip, I don't need any help right now. But it was hard for me. And I almost didn't want to tell the lady that I was a car dealer because there's this little bit of me that's like, I know how car dealers are viewed. And it took me a while to get to a piece in my life where God's okay with me being a car dealer. He just wants me to represent him. Because God needs godly car dealers who do it wrong just and do it right, but love him. And so I need you to hear that. We question and we wonder and we hover so much of our life because we're trying to seek out God's will. And it's like, I don't know, should I do this? Should I do this? Start walking. He's faithful. Get your eyes on him. He will direct your steps, but you've got to take steps. So oftentimes we're like, I'm not moving until God tells me which direction to go. And God's sitting there going, move and I'll show you where to go. Stop hovering, start living. Living sacrifice. Living sacrifice. Take the steps. God is faithful. Take the steps. God will direct them. We have been called to not hop on an altar and die. Jesus already did that. We need to embrace what he has already done for us. He paid the debt so that we can constantly live for him. I want to challenge y'all with that message this morning. Wow, it's only two verses, right? But so much in those two verses. Because we don't want you to be conformed, we need to be transformed. And the only one that has the ability to transform us is Jesus and his blood. If he has transformed you this morning, I want to challenge y'all to dive deeper down that well of the gospel message. Allow him to affect who you are. Quit chasing and living life of uncertainty and start just soaking in who he is. Man, he's faithful. If I can trust Jesus to wipe my sins away, I can trust him with my whole life. The big things and the little things. I don't know. We can go another hour. What do y'all think? We got all of them done, Jason. Hey, thank you guys for being here this morning. Thank you for not making me move to California. Appreciate that a lot. But more importantly, let these two verses kind of soak into your psyche. God has called us into a special place. Not to obey so that we receive. For we've already received. It should cause in us obedience. It should cause in us a desire to get to know the one who has rescued you. Paid your debt. Allowed you to live. This morning I want to challenge you with that message. If there's anything that we can do for you, I ask that you come as Jason.